Chair recognizes the representative from Portland, Representative Hink.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, men and women of the House. I would like to speak in support of this amendment and urge a vote of yes. I found the risk of delaying a while to press my button on a debate that I knew would take a while. In some sense, it seems like it's all been said, but I still feel that I could contribute a little to this discussion. In fact, by and large, people have stood up here and argued on both sides of this vote, but addressed many of the same issues, many of the same facts, reaching opposite conclusions. I don't disagree with the good representative from Whiting in much that he says about the criminal justice system. I signed on to this original bill, and never at any time did I want to see the elimination of the special management unit or segregation as a tool. I think a vote in support of this amendment keeps a discussion alive that is a discussion that belongs in the legislature. Discussing public policy in general, there was a quote from Martin Luther King. In fact, some of you had it on your desk, maybe all of us, in a yellow book on an unrelated subject. The Reverend said, "Cowardice asked the question, is it safe? Expediency asked the question, is it politic? Vanity comes along and asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right?" You go through that list, and I actually don't think it's cowardice that asks the question, is it safe? When we're talking about this subject, is it safe is an essential question. It is something that we all have to take seriously, and we task the Department of Corrections to address, and certainly the prison administration and everyone who works inside these facilities. Is it safe is an essential question. And also, is it politic? Is it popular? We're legislators. We have to ask that question. I think the people would assume that the next line in that quote is the one I'm referring to. Conscience asks the question, is it right? But it's not so much that issue, though I think it might lead to the same answer that compels my vote. I think that Reverend Martin Luther King left something out in that litany. Reason asked the question, is it smart? I honestly believe from looking at this issue that we could do this smarter, and we could save some resources, and we could get the result that we all want. And a good way to start that process is to examine it further. I think it's a mistake to urge that the legislature step aside. I have a great deal of respect for the department and certainly for the prison administration. I met with the warden, Patricia Barnhart, and Ms. Barnhart is impressive to me. Just a little bit on how someone in utilities and energy with an unrelated background gets here. I have been looking at these issues broadly for quite a while. A number of years ago, on several occasions, I was a jail visitor, having engaged in peaceful protests and being arrested with charges like disturbing the peace. So I've heard the door close behind me with me on the inside. Later on, I went to law school and did some criminal law work and did an internship with the Public Defender's Office in California and defended criminal defendants, including in one case a young man accused of murder. As far as I could tell, with the evidence we saw, the young man was guilty of murder. In a subsequent job, I worked as a prosecutor and did three criminal cases and sent three defendants to fairly long-term incarceration for, among other things, very serious drug smuggling offenses in the Pacific Island nation in which I was working in the government. It had an American legal system, and I think that sending people to jail was the right thing to do when they violated the law. Segregation, isolation, or solitary confinement raises different questions. So I took a tour of the facility at Warren with a number of other legislators in February and paid very close attention. I understand what the officials said when they testified here, but I didn't hear that when I went through the facility. A number of times, guards were very frank, speaking to us, that it isn't working quite right. They did ask us to leave it to them to keep working on it. They said it's working better than it used to. In fact, one guard said he was used to coming to work, and as he approached the building, the ventilation system was sending out the smell of human excrement mixed with mace. He says, we're doing better than that now. What's interesting about what he said was, I see no reason why a system that was running with so much mace and human excrement mixed in would violate the law. People refer to the constitutionality of what we're doing. If the prisons violate someone's constitutional rights, and they manage to bring a case, and they bring it to court, and they get a good trial, and they get a good decision, and it's a violation of constitutional rights, the judge will say something has to change. But all that says is we're not violating constitutional rights. That's not the standard we necessarily want to operate under. We don't in other areas. Our baseline standard isn't whether or not we're creating cruel and unusual punishment, whether or not we're torturing. I go back to the idea that we need to apply reason and ask whether what we're doing there is smart. And the one thing specifically I'm concerned about is the way in which the special management unit is used, I think too frequently, allows people to become more mentally unstable than unbalanced when they're there. And that creates more problems for us. I also believe that the prison administration is trying to deal with that. It was very apparent to me that their resources are too thin. It's been mentioned here today by legislators who support the prison administration and support the prisons. We're possibly running it on too little money, and it causes some compromises. The representative from Whiting acknowledged that the way that unit works right now, your typical inmate will spend 23 hours a day in isolation in a small, I think it's 12x7 cell. You know, I went into that one of those cells. One thing I was really happy to see from the inmate's perspective was there was two windows, one inside and one that they could see outside. If you look out that window, which I did, if I was in there, I'd be looking out that window a lot. But you could see all the security in the prison. It wasn't exactly like you got a view of what the rest of us get to enjoy. The reason why I mention this again is not for the comfort of the inmate. I was trying to go through my own mind, how do you stay reasonably sane if you're spending 23 hours in that little room by yourself? They allow inmates, it's been mentioned today, 3 books a week. To me, that would be a lifeline. If I was in there 23 hours a day, those books would be essential. There's almost nothing else. There is the hard thing you sleep on. There's the minimal thing that you use as a commode. And then these two windows. And that's it. And I'm not sure that I would handle it. But having the 3 books a week would help me. It also occurred to me that some of the people that are in there aren't even literate. A lot of people seem to me as though that we met, they're very disorganized mentally. I don't know that they can concentrate enough to read. Now what are you doing in there for 23 hours a day? We had the experience, thanks to the prison administration, and again, they were demonstrating their openness. We had the experience of having several people who'd served time in the SMU come into a room and address the legislators. I forget, there was about 6 or 7 of us, and they came in and sat at a table in front of us. Here's a few of the things that they said. I'm sorry, I apologize to committee members because I read these in testimony in committee. There is almost no meaningful stimulation of any kind for hour after hour. Noise is magnified. Once you start to notice noise, it never seems to stop. Everyone in there would be better if they just got some normal sleep, just some good sleep. I remember that inmate was thinking that no one in there was getting any good sleep, including the guards. The atmosphere that inmate described seemed very jittery, at least to him. It might have been the same fellow who said, "The guy in the cell next to me was mentally deranged. He was sick. When he knew I had problems with sounds, he would sit tapping on the wall. He could keep it up for hours. Not regular tapping, odd, irregular tapping. They took everything away from him, but he still had a fingernail and he could keep tapping." I know there needs to be a segregation unit, but it could be better. A person will do anything to make a change. Cutting up seems normal. Prisoners will do the most extreme.
Representative from Harrison, Representative Sykes, for what purpose does he rise?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I question the presence of a quorum.
Representative from Harrison, Representative Sykes, has questioned the presence of a quorum. Chair would answer that I believe there are 76 members, but if the representative would like to request a quorum call, we could do a quorum call.
Yes, Madam Speaker, I request a quorum call.
Quorum call. First call of absentees. Second call of absentees. Have all now voted? All now voted. Chair will close the vote. 127 having voted in the affirmative, the chair would answer a quorum is now present. Chair recognizes Representative from Portland, Representative Hink. He may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, men and women of the House. It's good to have a full quorum here. Before a quorum call, I was talking about an inmate in the SMU who was talking about using the words cutting up, which I had not heard used that often previously. It honestly seems as though it's a big issue with the SMU. I think one of the problems is that these people who are there have made a lot of mistakes to get that far. Some, but probably not all, of their mistakes are criminal. The people we met, as far as I knew, had committed murder. It might not have been true of each of them. But now they're down to the point where they're put in this 12-by-7 room, and they have less and less control. And cutting themselves is a way to get attention. In fact, one inmate said in the cell he was searching every little crack in the walls of the cell, hoping to find some kind of blade so he could cut the artery in his throat and pull the sheet over and bleed out. Look, as I mentioned, I looked at the guy and understood that he was guilty of murder. I'm not necessarily believing everything that these people are saying is true. but I actually believed him. I think that was the honest truth. Oh, another inmate said, not about himself, but others that are in the SMU, that sometimes what they get aggressive with guards. Again, they don't have many tools. Throwing feces. If they get the opportunity for 12 guards to jump on them, at least they have some interaction. I mean, this is, I don't describe this as a suggestion, that this is a great place for us to look to salvation. I think that it is a place where we should be as careful as we can to protect safety and in any way possible try and preserve the sanity of the people that end up in there. The representative from Whiting said that he didn't think that being in the SMU made a person better. I think the thing is, we could do it better so that the SMU doesn't make them worse. If that was the last stop, it would be another issue. You send them to the SMU, all contact drops off, and that's the last we see of them. But statistically, that's not true. Although they may spend quite a bit of time there in some instances, one day they're back in the prison population. And many of them are back in the general population. Probably the most sympathetic of the people speaking to us seemed incredibly, incredibly insecure about speaking. He volunteered to come and sit in front of 7 legislators, and he doubted his own ability to speak to us and said something to the effect that, I really don't know if I can still engage in normal human contact and interaction. And I said to him, you're doing a good job here today, and he looked at me like I threw him a lifeline. It's this situation that I think we could improve. I don't hear the prison administration to honestly say that's not possible. I do hear them to say, as has been said here today, leave it to us. But they're also paying guards very, very little. The corrections officers are getting paid very little. They are working under tight pressure most days. It's a bit of a hair trigger environment. I think if we're going to get the right policies in the SMU, it would take some work that the legislature should do. We are the people that set policy for this state. I'll just end. I'll add what the rest of the Martin Luther King quote was. And there comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but he must do it because conscience tells him it's right. I say we do it because reason tells us it's smart. Sometimes there comes a time, and this may indeed be one of those times, for conscience and for doing what is right. But it is always a time to use reason and do what's smart. Let's be smart and use extreme measures like solitary confinement or segregation sparingly, so that in addition to keeping us safe, it does not push people on the edge, over the edge, and create more problems, more costs than we can shoulder. A vote in favor of the resolve will enable progress toward agreed-upon mission of providing safe, secure, and humane facilities that allow for the possibility that some offenders can progress toward being less of a threat, more manageable, and could potentially even return from the facility and be functioning in some cases. I'd say vote for the resolve, and let's not take this off the table and wash our hands of it. I think it's partly our job. Thank you, Madam Speaker.